Today I'd like to speak to you on the subject overcoming instead of being overcome. Recently, I was thinking about one of the most difficult times in my life. When I pastored in San Diego, California, we purchased 120 acres of land on a freeway. And I don't know if you'll relate to this in Australia, but in the States, especially in Southern California, more than any other place in the States, there's a lot of difficulty when you buy land of getting it zoned properly to build. And so there's a lot of bureaucracy, there's a lot of red tape. Literally, when we bought this piece of property, it took us 10 years from the day we bought it to get it zoned to build on it. It took us 10 years to get it zoned. It cost us probably close to $2 million to go through the legal process. The Wall Street Journal interviewed me and said we are the last church to buy that much property and to be able to pull off the zoning. I cannot explain to you the hurdles and the obstacles. We probably went through at least 32 or 33 barriers to get the land zoned. I mean, it was basically people said it can't be done. I said basically it will be done. And just through creativity, hard work, prayer, alliances, teamwork, relationships, networking, through all the stuff that you got to do, every problem that came up our way, we found a way to get around it until the land is zoned. And interestingly enough, next month they'll break ground. And they'll start this $35 million building project that I'm very proud of, because I paved the way, bought the land, raised millions and millions and millions of dollars. And one of the biggest challenges was raising millions of dollars for the property when I didn't have any assurance we'd be able to build on it. Yeah. Try that one. In fact, when we started, it was basically said, you can't raise money for property that you can't build on. And I said, I don't have any choice, because I knew I had to ramp up because there were so many millions of dollars we needed. I knew I was going to have to do it. And so I would, with integrity, stand before the people and say, now look, I'm going to ask you to give to this project. I want you to understand that there's a possibility we can't ever build on it. But we got to start giving to it now. And literally, through leadership and the favor of God and the favor of people, we raised millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars for this piece of property. And there were, like I said, 32, 34, 35 barriers. But one of the hang-ups was there's a bird, a black-tailed gnatcatcher, that just didn't live on that property, just landed on that property when flying en route. That was one of the barriers to overcome. In fact, we had to purchase land other places for the black-tailed gnatcatcher to land on, as if you, I don't know, communicate to the bird, you know, now you land over here. I don't want to get started, but there are an awful lot of stupid people in life. And it's just hard to get around dumb people. You know what I'm saying? It takes a long time. Okay. So somebody, for consolation, sent this to me. Now as I'm talking about the property, the lesson is all about overcoming and how to get resistance. And the whole story I just gave you of the resistance and all the issues, you're going to relate to this. And somebody sent this to me that I thought was really good. And I'm going to read it to you. And the Lord spoke to Noah and said, in 6 months, I'm going to make it rain until the whole earth is covered with water and all the evil people are destroyed. But I want to save a few good people and two of every kind of living things on the planet. So I'm ordering you, Noah, to build an ark. And in a flash of lightning, he delivered the specifications for the ark. Okay, said Noah, trembling in fear and fumbling with the blueprints. 6 months and it starts to rain, thundered the Lord. You better have the ark completed or learn how to swim for a very long time. And 6 months passed. The skies began to cloud up and the rain began to fall. And the Lord saw that Noah was sitting in his front yard weeping. And there was no ark. Noah, shouted the Lord, where is my ark? Lightning bolt crashed her on the ground next to Noah. Lord, he said, please forgive me. I did my best, but there were big problems. First of all, I had to get a building permit for the ark construction project. And your plans didn't make code. So I had to fire an engineer and redraw the plans. Then I got in a big fight over whether or not the ark needed a fire sprinkler system. My neighbors objected, claiming that I was violating zoning by building the ark in my front yard, so I had to get a variance from the city planning commission. Then I had a big problem getting enough wood for the ark because there was a ban on cutting trees to save the spotted owl. I had to convince the U.S. Fish and Wildlife that I needed the wood to save the owls, but they wouldn't let me catch any owls, so there are no owls. Then the carpenters formed a union, and they went on strike, and I had to negotiate a settlement with the National Labor Relations Board before anyone could pick up a saw or a hammer. Now we have 16 carpenters going on the boat, but we still have no owls. Then I started gathering up animals, and I got sued by the animal rights groups. They objected to me taking only two of each kind. Then when I got that suit dismissed, the EPA, that's the Environment Protection Agency, notified me that I couldn't complete the ark without filing an environmental impact statement on your proposed flood. They didn't take kindly to the idea that they had no jurisdiction over the conduct of a supreme being. Then the Army Corps of Engineers wanted a map of the proposed new flood plan. I sent them a globe. I love that one. Right now, he said, I'm still trying to resolve a complaint from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission over how many Croatians I'm supposed to fire. The IRS has seized all my assets, claiming I'm trying to avoid paying taxes by leaving the country. And I just got a notice from the state about owing some kind of use tax. I really don't think I can finish your ark for at least another 5 years, Noah wailed. The sky began to clear. The sun began to shine. A rainbow arched across the sky. Noah looked up and smiled. You mean you're not going to destroy the earth? Noah asked hopefully. No, said the Lord. Sadly, the government already has. Whoa. Hey, and you and I thought we had problems. We don't have near the problems Noah had in building that ark, huh? Oh, that is so much. I just thought it was so cute. That's so fun. And you know, we must laugh because that is so real. You know, either you laugh or you laugh or you commit suicide. One of the two. And it just is amazing. Well, you know what? In your life and in my life, we don't have to build an ark, thank God, and do that. But I'm telling you, we're going to have all kind of obstacles, barriers, difficulties in our life. I have a minor in counseling, and I used to do 30 hours of counseling a week. And in doing 30 hours of counseling a week, you very quickly begin to see patterns. And one of the things that I realized is that people who give up are usually beat up with what I call the four R's. So if you'll allow me in this lesson on overcoming instead of being overcome, I want to talk to you about the four R's. I'm going to give them to you now. The first two R's basically deal with ourselves, and they're what I call the inside issues of our own life. Number one is regret. I run into a lot of people that are filled with regret. Boy, I wish I wouldn't have done this. I wish I would have done this. Oh, I missed that opportunity back there. The second R is resentment. There are an awful lot of people that hold an awful lot of resentment within their lives, and those are both what I call the inside issues. What I mean by that is that if you're going to overcome them, you don't have to look toward anyone else. You're going to have to do that on your own. That's an inside job that has to be handled. Now the second two R's, number three and number four, they come from the outside. The third R is resistance. Whether it's a parent whose children are resisting their values, or a salesperson that the customer is resisting their product, we every day come up, or it's Noah building an ark, we all come up against a certain amount of resistance in life. And the fourth R is rejection. What happens when whatever we share isn't accepted. Okay. So those are the four R's that I want to talk to you about. And if you'll allow me in this overcoming lesson, I'm going to just take them one at a time. Let's talk, first of all, about regret. Okay? And in your notes, Catherine Mansfield said, regret is an appalling waste of energy. You can't build on it. It's only good for wallowing in. You see, regret results into two things. And the wallowing that Catherine Mansfield is talking about is the first thing that results, that regret results into, and that is self-pity. When a person is filled with self-pity, very seldom can they accomplish very much in their life. Eugene Peterson is one of my favorite authors. There are certain people that whenever they write a book, I just buy the book because I like the author. Eugene Peterson is one of those. And he's done a lot of good stuff. And I'm reading now from his book, Earth and Altar. And it's in your notes, I believe. So just let's go along with it. Just wrong. Pity is one of the noblest emotions available to human beings. Self-pity is possibly the most ignoble. Pity is the capacity to enter into the pain of another in order to do something about it. Self-pity is the incapacity, a crippling emotional disease that severely distorts our perception of reality. Pity discovers the need in others for love and healing, and then fashions speech and action that brings strength. Self-pity reduces the universe to a personal wound that is displayed as proof of significance. Pity is adrenaline for acts of mercy, and self-pity is a narcotic that leaves its addicts wasted and derelict. Now you know why I love Eugene Peterson. The guy is an artist with words. Let me read one thing that's not in your notes. Psychiatrist Frederick Flack wrote a book called Resilience. And in it he said this. He said that as he what he did in this book is he studied the life of people that were survivors, whether it was through the Holocaust or whatever, but they were people that had gone through difficult times and they had survived and gotten back up. And here's what he said. He said, what survivors have in common, among other things, is that they do not accept the label or identity of a victim. They do not say, what happened to me is the worst thing in the world and I'll never be free of it. They say, what happened to me was pretty bad, but other people are worse off. And they don't wallow in the why me syndrome. What happens when we regret is that we have a tendency to feel sorry for ourselves and wallow in self-pity. The second result of regret is guilt. There are many times that because of regret we feel very guilty. And people who feel guilty, I was reading this survey recently, are more susceptible to diseases. Combined studies at Harvard, University of Michigan, Dartmouth, suggest that the physiological effects of prolonged self-blame are cumulative with rapid physical deterioration, and it becomes obvious around the age of 45. For some of us, it's too late, isn't it, huh? I say, oh my goodness sakes alive, I've already blown that one. Let me just talk about regret for just a minute or two, and then I want to get on, because there are a couple of the R's I really want to spend quite a bit of time with. I run into a lot of people that missed opportunities, or at the age that I'm at 51, they say, oh my goodness, over half my life is over, and I wish I would have, I wish I could have, the whole issue. And I did an Enjoy Life Club tape recently entitled, If I Could Do It All Over Again. And first of all, what it was is all I did is I spent a few days writing down all the mistakes I've made. And I filled up six legal pages of mistakes. I mean, I had hundreds of mistakes that I'd made. And then I thought, oh man, I don't have time to speak on these 330 mistakes I've made. And so I said, I'll just do the top 10. Well, that took me another day, because I thought, I'd say, oh, that was a bad one, and then I look down and say, oh, that was even worse. I thought, there were so many mess-ups that it really took me a long time to clean a mess up of the mess-ups that I had made in my life. So finally I got down to the top 10 mistakes I made, and that's what this lesson was. If I could do it all over again, and I had subtitled Mistakes I Made and Lessons I've Learned. And for 1 hour and about 10 minutes in this tape that'll come out about a month or two from now in the Enjoy Life Club side, I did this tape on all the mistakes that I've made in my life. And now as I look back at them, some were pretty terrible and some were pretty hysterical. But at the end, I left the tape, I closed the tape with this thought that I asked myself when I got done with this lesson. I said, okay, if I could do it all over again, I wouldn't do it all over again. And the reason why is I came to the conclusion that although I may not make those mistakes, I would make others. Because that is life. And the moment that we begin to understand that that is life, we begin to get a different perspective of regret. People that have high regret in their life don't have a great grip on what life is all about. When I hear a parent say, boy, if I would have just done better raising my child, and I look at the parent, I say, you don't understand. You're not going to do great raising the child. I didn't do great raising my children. I mean, I did my best, but my best isn't great. You just look back and you just say, wow, I wish I'd have been more patient here. I wish I could have seen it through their eyes on this issue. And what happens is that we get this idea somehow that we can live a perfect life, and so therefore we allow ourselves to regret things that we shouldn't be regretting. Not because we wouldn't want to change it or do it better or whatever.